And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. You never know when you'll be tempted to write down something, like this announcement from the Oregon Natural Defense, or Natural Desert Association, excuse me. The Oregon Natural Desert Association is having their annual Heart Mountain Barbed Wire Roundup, and this is July 24th through the 28th at the Hot Springs Campground Heart Mountain National Antelope Refuge near Plush, Oregon. And I want to say that Uncle Dennis has been in the Hot Springs at Heart Mountain National Antelope Refuge. I saw a couple of antelope, but anyway, it is a hot springs. Kind of a bummer hot springs, though. It's got a big concrete block wall around it. Anyway, the Oregon Natural Desert Association cordially invites you to join us for a few days of fun, hard work, and hot springs in the high desert of south central Oregon. From July 24th through the 28th, we'll gather at the Heart Mountain National Antelope Refuge to hike, camp, soak in the hot springs, and volunteer with refuge staff to remove old, obsolete fencing that is dangerous to wildlife. Heart Mountain is now in its 10th year as a cow-free wildlife refuge, thanks to the efforts of the Oregon Natural Desert Association and other conservation groups. And dang, it looks good. The barbed wire roundup is one way of supporting the refuge while giving something back to native wildlife. What to bring? Camping gear and food, including food for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday night potluck dinners. And drinking water is available at the refuge headquarters. Other indispensable items include plenty of water bottles, heavyweight work gloves, sunscreen, sun hat, insect repellent, long pants. Insect repellent. Uncle Dennis definitely agrees. Insect repellent is a good thing to have at the Heart Mountain National Antelope Refuge. Long pants, waterproof footwear, camp chair, tasty snacks to fuel your fence pulling. If you'd like to register, please send an email with your name, address, and phone number to G Lyons. That's G-L-Y-O-N-S at onda.org. That's G-L-Y-O-N-S at onda.org. Or you can call them 503-525-0193. That's 503-525-0193. Or, and that's in Portland, if you want to call them in Bend, Oregon, it's 541-330-2638. That's 541-330-2638. This camping trip is free of charge, and I'll look forward to seeing you at Heart Mountain July 24th through the 28th at the Hot Springs Campground near Plush, Oregon. And now we're going to get into a commentary. This is the second part of a commentary that we started last week, where we spoke about logging by international logging companies in South America. This time we are moving to Africa, and we're going to talk about logging fuels crimes and corruption in the Cameroon. And this series is by Mark Jaffe of The Inquirer. And let's go. How much is a rainforest worth? The men from the Lebanese timber company who came to this pygmy village of mud huts, hemmed in by the thick, dark woods of the Congo Basin, had their own idea. The loggers gave us 5,000 francs, that's about $70, sacks of rice and salt, a carton of soap, and two demijohns of red wine, said village leader Kanga Simon Géometre. For that and a vague promise of more money later, the village elders last fall signed a contract allowing the company, Le Soleil, to log Bosquet's new community forest. The government-granted 3,200-acre forest was supposed to be the Baka Pygmy's economic toehold in Cameroon's rich forest, valued by the World Bank at $70 billion. But the designs of foreign loggers were as familiar now as in the French colonial times, and the village's forest ended up back in the hands of foreign timber interests. This is all new to us, said Géometre, manager of the Bosquet Forest. We want to nullify the contract and start again. This tale is being repeated across Cameroon's eastern province, where Bosquet and its neighboring villages stand in the path of some of the world's most intense tropical logging. Money from Europe and Asia is fueling a push into the 435-million-acre Congo Basin, the world's second-largest rainforest. Legally and illegally, timber companies, often with the aid of well-connected politicians, are descending on these dense and tangled forests. The scramble for tropical wood isn't limited to Cameroon. Throughout the tropics, from Africa to South America, from Papua New Guinea to Cambodia, well-financed multinational conglomerates are overwhelming the efforts to regulate logging. And in the rush, illegal cutting and government corruption are flourishing. A recent World Bank analysis found that in many countries, illegal logging is similar in size to legal production. In other words, it exceeds legal logging by a substantial margin. The tropical timber is flowing mainly to the growing Asian market, where it is used in construction, furniture, and manufactured goods. There has, however, been a counteroffensive by environmental groups and international development agencies to control this logging. The forests of Cameroon have emerged as an important battlefield in that struggle. And we'll read a news story a little later that pertaining to this. The government, prodded by the World Bank and European Commission, is now trying to balance logging with the preservation of tropical forests. The Cameroon government has passed new laws aimed at better managing timber. It has done this in part because the World Bank threatened to withhold loans if it did not. This is a moment of maximum tension, said Giuseppe Topa, the World Bank's leading African forestry official. The next 18 months will tell if Cameroon is going to seriously implement its forest law. The logging industry is, however, wary of the new program. The policy is not very clear, said Jean-Jacques Landreau, Secretary General of the Intra-African Forest Industry Association, a trade group. Landreau said the bank's approach is contradictory. Do they want the forest to pay a country's debt, he asked? Do they want to keep it as a national park to preserve biodiversity? Do they want to use it to develop a country's economy? Who knows? Openings for other ills. The woods sought by the loggers from the Pygmies are among the most biologically diverse rainforests in the planet, or on the planet. 80% of the flowering plants and a third of the birds are found nowhere else in the world. This is the land of the Congo peacock, the leopard, the forest elephant, the okapi, the lowland gorilla, the chimpanzee, and many, many monkeys. Loggers in Africa take only the most valuable trees on an acre, sometimes no more than two or three, because the cost of getting the timber to port is very high. Still, the impact is great. Roads have to be cut into the forest. Mechanized skidders pull the logs through the forest to the roads. Even a single large tree crashing down can damage surrounding foliage and open an area as large as half an acre. Studies in neighboring Gabon estimated that 20 to 30% of an area in the concession was damaged and left open by logging. One severe impact has been the rise of the bushmeat trade, as hunters follow the logging roads in search of game such as gorillas and chimps. Every morning when the train from the east pulls into the central station in the nation's capital, Yaoundé, among the crush of people and goods are vendors bringing carcasses of antelope, monkeys, and apes. The World Wildlife Fund estimates that tons of bushmeat can be found in the Yaoundé market on any given day. Such voracious hunting also has an effect on villages such as Bosque. Once logging begins, the animals that have always provided food disappear as commercial hunters wipe out all the game in a 30 or 40 mile radius. Philip Aswell, a social researcher from the Gembloux Agricultural University in Belgium, said that after the game is gone, the loggers eat a lot of frozen chicken. But the villagers can't afford frozen food, Azul said. They are left eating plants, rats, and porcupines. So why did the Baka Pygmies so readily sell the timber rights to their community forest? We could use the money, Geometris said simply. That answer underscores one of the fundamental dilemmas of this continent. Poverty is a problem in Africa, said Wally Adeleke, coordinator of the African Forest Programs for the Worldwide Fund for Nature. The instinct on every level is to get your own. Deals are struck in villages and in Lomé, the provincial seat, and in Yaoundé, the national capital. Timber companies, for example, are supposed to pay a tax to help villages pay for schools, clinics, and other social services. The regional fund for the eastern province was supposed to have $250,000 in it for 1998-99. A World Bank audit found only $270. What happened to the rest? Remains a mystery. At the national level, lucrative concessions have been awarded to prominent politicians, military officials, and members of well-connected families who turned around and leased them to multinationals. In October, Global Witness, an environmental and human rights group based in England, was invited to run a demonstration logging inspection program in central Cameroon by the government. The group turned up a massive illegal logging operation, but its report to the government was shelved because the concessions were owned by politically connected Cameroonians. The report has never been released. Logging and corruption go hand in hand in Cameroon, said Stuart Wilson, a Global Witness inspector. Things can't change all at once, the World Bank's Topa said. You have to measure the improvements. Under prodding from the World Bank, Cameroon did step up its timber tax collections, and revenues grew 78% between 1990 and 1997 to $32 million. And a few of the logging companies are changing. Some of the companies are seriously making an effort to develop forestry plans for sustainable logging. Not all, but some, said Elaine Kersetny, a researcher with the Paris-based Center for International Forestry Research. Who has the cash? About the same time Bosquet was granted its 3,200-acre community forest, French timber giant Fannery was awarded a commercial concession or lease of 110,000 acres next to the Pygmy Village. The Fannery concession is about the same size as Delaware County. The fixed costs for logging such a tract here are estimated to be more than $1 million. Big money like that has to come from outside Cameroon, Adeliki of the Worldwide Fund for Nature said. A large chunk of that money is coming from Asia. For example, last summer, Vicwood Development Limited, a Hong Kong-based conglomerate with wood finishing factories in the Philippines and China, an office skyscraper in Hong Kong, and luxury condominium and golf course projects in Seattle, purchased a share in Fannery's Cameroon interests. Asian companies led by Malaysian conglomerates began to make a big push into African, South American, and Southeastern Asian forests in the early 1990s. That's when they arrived in Cameroon. Timber production, which averaged about 1 million cubic meters in the 1980s, rose to 2.5 million cubic meters in 1993 and have reached $3.3 million in 1998. In 1990, only 7% of Cameroon's exported logs were shipped to Asia, but by 1995 that figure had risen to 50%. In volume, it represented nearly a 13-fold increase to 1.25 million cubic meters. Cameroon is now the fourth largest exporter of tropical logs in the world after Malaysia, Papua New Guinea, and neighboring Gabon, according to the International Tropical Timber Organization. In October, representatives from Bosquet and 35 other villages gathered in Lumi, the provincial seat, to meet with government officials and representatives of the new Fannery concession. More than 150 people turned out at Lumi's community hall, a squat stucco box built by colonial Germans. The crowd was so big that many people had to sit outside under a thatched palm awning and listen through open windows and doors. The representative of the Fannery subsidy vowed to obey the new logging laws, but some village leaders and environmentalists were doubtful. They point to the company's history in Cameroon and the Ministry of Environment and Forest's first comprehensive inspection report on logging concessions released in December of 1999. Of the 26 concessions surveyed in the eastern province, an area that accounts for 40% of Cameroon's timber production, violations were found in all but one. Among those cited were three Fannery concessions. They were found to be cutting timber without a license, cutting trees below the legal size, and cutting outside the boundaries of their concession. The forest operations, as carried out by this company, the ministry wrote, undermine the entire forestry policy and sustainable forestry management. The Fannery sites were fined a total of $60,000. Some operators with bad records were blocked from bidding on new concessions last summer, and the World Bank saw that as a major step. The Fannery was not one of those blocked. In August, its subsidiary won a concession near Bosquet. The internal World Bank report noted that forest sector reforms have had limited success, particularly given the resistance of private companies to the reforms suggested by the bank. Christian Smita, associate director of Fannery Cameroon, said the major logging companies are making a serious effort to follow the forestry law. The law was passed almost 10 years ago, Smita said, but it wasn't until the last 2 years that the government began to enforce it. We are trying to follow some complex regulations, but if you don't, then you risk not being able to bid on concessions, so we are all taking the rules seriously. Still, the villagers of Bosquet must wait until to see what will be the fate of their community and the forest that surrounds it. I'm not sure at all if there is enough forest between us and the logging, Bosquet's Gay Ometre said. When you look at it, bird's eye, on a map, it looks small, but when you walk in the forest, it seems large. Who can say? Now that's our commentary for today by Mark Jaffe of The Inquirer, and hopefully we'll find the third part of that series, but maybe not. And in a related story that just came through a couple of days ago, Cameroon has cracked down on unruly logging companies. Dated June 11th from Yaoundé, Cameroon, the government of Cameroon has slapped sanctions on 65 logging companies for violating regulations on the exploitation of forests. State Radio said late on Saturday, 30 firms had their licenses suspended and another 35 were ordered to pay fines ranging from $130,000 to almost $1 million. The penalties were imposed barely 10 days after the International Tropical Timber Organization called for more international aid to help poor countries preserve their tropical forests for future generations. The radio said the companies were variously charged with unauthorized forest exploitation, cutting wood beyond their concessions, non-respect of regulations, and use of false documents. Cameroon ranks among the world's top five tropical log exporters. Timber generates nearly 30% of non-petroleum export revenues and employs some 55,000 people in Cameroon. According to a report by Global Forest Watch, nearly 80% of Cameroon's forests have either been logged or have been allocated in logging concessions. And that story came from us from Reuters News Service. And they did it. They stopped old-growth logging in New Zealand. It was a big day for Kiwi forest activists. The government finally announced the transfer of all of the West Coast native forests from the state-owned logging company Timberlands to the Department of Conservation. That is, all 130,000 hectares, about 500,000 acres of native forest held by the state-owned logging company Timberlands West Coast will be transferred to the Department of Conservation, including extensions to several national parks, creation of two new conservation parks, many other extensions to the network of reserves. This is both a great announcement after many years of campaigning for New Zealand's forests, but it should also be taken as inspiration for all public lands campaigners overseas, for example, in the U.S., Chile, and Australia. We urge you to take this example from the South Pacific to heart and continuing your struggle for a complete end to logging of remnant old-growth forests the world over. Zero cut. If you want more details, you can go to Native Forest Action at www.nfa.org.nz. That's www.nfa.org.nz. They stopped it. All the old growth logging in New Zealand is shut down. And from California, we read that the Quincy Library Group Forest Project may be shut down. Sacramento, California, Federal Judge Lawrence Carlton has ruled that he will halt work on a controversial fire reduction project mandated by Congress if the U.S. Forest Service continues to ignore environmental impacts of maintenance and the use of herbicides. An environmental impact statement prepared by the U.S. Forest Service to implement the Quincy Library Group Forest Protection Act unlawfully ignores how maintenance will be conducted on 320,000 acres of fuel breaks, Carlton ruled, and amounts to an abuse of discretion. A revised environmental impact statement that complies with this order must be published for public comment within 4 months, or work on the project will stop, the judge ruled. Californians for Alternatives to Toxics, or CATS, sued the Forest Service for not factoring into its plan the impact of brush and grasses that will regrow in cleared fuel breaks and maintenance that may involve herbicides to prevent fire risk and harm to firefighters. The Forest Service is radically altering vegetation on 320,000 acres of forest without knowing what the ultimate result is going to be, said Patty Clary, director of CATS. The bottom line is that the Forest Service thumbed its nose at the biological imperative and an interested public that was trying to bring scientific evidence to its attention. Judge Carlton found that the hard look at the environmental results of the Forest Service actions is required by the National Environmental Policy Act and was not done in the existing environmental impact statement. These actions may lead to Forest Service proposals for using herbicides on thousands of acres each year, said Clary. The court's decision means that the Forest Service must address these significant impacts so that Congress and the public can be able to revise the plan if necessary to avoid environmentally destructive actions. Though maintenance was not addressed specifically in the Quincy Act, the Forest Service was directed to conduct a study of the environmental effects of the firebreak plan as required under NEPA. The Quincy Act mandates the construction of a network of fuel breaks by removing trees and shrubs on areas of the forest a quarter to a half a mile wide and several miles long on 40 to 60,000 acres per year for 5 years. The network will ultimately cover one quarter of the land base of the Plumas and Lassen National Forest and the Sierra Vale District of the Tahoe National Forest. Californians for Alternatives to Toxics is based in Arcata, California. If you'd like more information about CATS, see www.alternativestotoxics, that's the number 2, alternativestotoxics.org, or you can call 707-822-8255. 7072-8497. That's 707-822-8497. Let's move into some animal news here. South African coelacanth search has been halted by authorities. The South African expedition to find and film the coelacanth, a fossil fish that has swum the seas for around 400 million years, has been halted by authorities for conservation reasons. The move comes after the expedition caught one of the elusive fish on film on Monday. I guess that's a while ago, and footage was broadcast on the internet. The coelacanth, which measures up from 1 to 2 meters in length, was believed to have been extinct for about 60 million years until one was caught off the South African coast in 1938. The KwaZulu-Natal Wildlife, a provincial wildlife authority responsible for marine reserve where the coelacanths have been found, said it could not allow dives in the area until more information was obtained on the species numbers. It is essential that information about the number and distribution of coelacanths in our waters is obtained before any activities that may disturb them are allowed, KZN Wildlife said in a statement on Wednesday. It added that a scientific expedition was planned for early next year, after which recreational and filming opportunities will be considered. It would be irresponsible and premature for KZN Wildlife, as custodians of the marine reserve and of a rare species of international significance, to allow it the expedition at this stage, it said. It added that in other parts of the world where the coelacanth has been found, the Comoro Islands and Indonesia, the species has been threatened by massive interest from collectors, scientists, and those wishing to view them in their habitat. Peter Ventner, who is leading the private expedition to film the coelacanths, has said there has also been complications from the issuing of their permit to dive in the area. "We are trying to resolve this now so we can get the permit and get on with the expedition," he told Reuters by phone from Sadwana Bay on South Africa's northeast coast. The coelacanth, a distinctive-looking fish nicknamed Old Four Legs because of its extra limb-like fins, inhabits canyons and caves at depths of below 100 meters, safe from all but the most intrepid divers. Diving at such depths is dangerous, and there have been 3 deaths linked to the search for South Africa's coelacanths. Ventner, who found South Africa's coelacanths during a dive in October last year and who filmed 3 of them with a team in November, said scuba divers were not very intrusive and were unlikely to disturb the fish, especially as the maximum time they can spend at 100 meters of depth is 12 minutes. And we'd like to thank Ed Stoddard for this story on the Reuters News Service. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for news. To get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, please send us email at cruzeef@cruzeio.com. That's cruzeef@cruzeio.com, cruzeef@cruzeio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio. We're at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And please be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you'd like more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. That's Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. And you can listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Go to the website www.microradio.net/FRSC, and you'll get tuned in to Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can also check out www.live365.com. Search for Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you can listen in there also. There are lots of great shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz anytime. And you can always find Earth First Radio archive shows on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. And when you get there, search for Earth First Radio. This show has been number 146. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations, such as Variety Radio, WFRWA, 98.1 FM in Warrenton, Virginia. And Earth First Radio is broadcast there on 7 p.m. on Friday evenings. And there's a Saturday and Sunday show to be announced, so keep tuning to 98.1 in the Warrenton, Virginia area. Earth First Radio, and if you do have a local station, ask them to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney off the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to Work Calling. This is a piece by Jesse Wolf Harden.
There's no more important work than for us to learn how to be real and learning to love that flawed but responsible self. And there's no greater calling for that enlivened self than the protection, restoration, and celebration of the instructive and inspirited land. We could live to be 100, and that would still be a very short time in which to fulfill some meaningful purpose. And yet we are seldom allotted that many years. So how can we give so much energy to obtaining emotional and physical comfort when neither is meant to last? How can anyone do anything out of a desire for personal material gain when all such gain is soon lost? How can one make decisions out of a desire for glory when the commentators of the present fail to grok the depths of our gestures or understand the foundations of our motivation? And when history is so quick to dismiss or to forget? All there is service. And the most commendable service of all is that which is deliberate. Service executed at a great personal cost, challenged by a great suffering, tested by the dearth of credit from our uncaring and unnoticing kind. The grinning bobcat skull by my desk outlasts the flesh that once covered it. But in time, it too will dissolve into the characterless dust and molecules of life's prodigious palate. In the long run, it is only truth that survives, and only devotion that abides. As I contemplate my own one day mortal end, I sense how this devotion binds us, not to some ever persisting form, but to an eternal sacred calling. It is that calling which lasts, and perhaps nothing else, kept in focus by the strength of our intent, kept alive by the insistence of our fiercest giving love. Blessings on you and on all of you who might ever follow this example among the generations of potential lovers and protectors yet to come. May we each be worthy of our individual calling and true to its completion. And until we all in turn tumble inward into the earth's embracing arms, may we stand strong against whatever challenges this fulfillment of our highest holy purpose.